Okay, today's daf is Bava Basra daf Chaf Aleph. We are holding on the bottom of daf Chaf Amid Beis at the Mishnah. This Mishnah is going to talk about which activities a member of a chatzer can prevent other members of a chatzer from engaging in on account of the noise, because it's going to bring too much noise into the chatzer. And that's going to lead us into a discussion about setting up melamde tinokos, setting up schools for young children in a chatzer. And we're going to talk about the takana of Yoshua ben Gamla and how he saved the Torah by establishing a system of Talmud Torah for young children. The Gemara is going to have three different challenges to this heter, to set up a melamde tinokos in a chatzer, but we're going to defend all of the challenges. Then the Gemara is going to have five different statements of Rava, all about chinuch of young children. He's going to talk about how far one has to bring a child to a school, and at what point he could say, you know what, my child doesn't have to travel this far, we have to set up a school in the local town. How many kids should be in a class, ideally? When can you fire a Rebbe if you find a better Rebbe, if it's ever permissible to fire a Rebbe because you just found a better one, but not because the first one did anything wrong? And what if you have two Rebbeim, you have an option of hiring two Rebbeim, one who covers a lot of ground and one who's very precise? Which one should you hire? And we're going to discuss how melamde tinokos are considered pre-warned, that if they mess up, they get fired immediately because it's considered a pseudo de lo hadar. It's an irretrievable loss when they mess up. And then on Amud Beis, about a third of the way down the page till the end of the daf, we're going to discuss when can you and can't you stop a competing business from opening up in your locality, because you already have a business that's running in that location. So let's begin at the Mishnah on Daf Chaf Amud Beis. Chanus shebechatzer. If you have a store in a chatzer, yachal limchos biyado velomer lo eni yachalishon mikol anaklasen mikol hayotzin. You're allowed to tell the guy, you cannot open up a store here, I can't sleep because of all the people that are going in and out of the store. So avalosa kalim, but if the guy wants, he can produce kalim in the chatzer, yotze, and then take those kalim out and mocher betoch hashuk and sell them out in the market. Veino yachal limchos biyado, and no one is able to stop him in the chatzer from producing those kelim. And tell him, no, I can't sleep because of the banging away in making all these kelim. Or if he's running a mill in the chatzer, you can't tell him, I can't sleep because of the running of the mill. Or if there are tinokos in the chatzer, you can't say that I can't sleep because of these tinokos. You're not allowed to stop him. Now the Rashi points out, and Tosfos also points out, that the Gemara's have I mean over here is when it talks about tinokos, we're talking about tinokos that are coming to a store to buy things that you're selling in a store. And that's why the Gemara right away is going to ask, wait a second, it's a stira. The beginning of the Mishnah said that you're allowed to tell a person, I don't want your store here because there are people going in and out, it's making too much noise. And at the end we say, no, you can't stop him for the tinokos that are going in and out of the store. You're not able to stop him. It doesn't matter that they're making so much noise. They're allowed to come in and out to go buy things in the store. That's the Gemara's hava mina, what tinokos is talking about. We'll see in the Maskana that's not what the Mishnah is actually talking about, but that's at least what we assume it's talking about. There is a Machlokas Rishonim over here about what exactly the Taina is that I can't sleep Mikol HaNichnasin or Mikol HaYotzin. The Rashba understands that when we say Mikol HaNichnasin VYotzin, it's because they make when we say that they make a lot of noise, it's Lav Davka. The Hezek of the Kol is not enough to stop him. It's just simply the traffic that it brings into the Chatzar. It's not the noise that it brings into the chatzer. You just don't like having all this traffic in the chatzer, all this foot traffic, all these people coming through your chatzer all the time. However, the Yad Ramah understands that no, it is the noise of the nechnasim, and that's why the Mishnah says mikol hanechnasim. It's very precise in the language, and also the riboy aderech. And it's not like why then when the guy is producing kalim in the chatzer, can you not stop him? Why is it that if he's banging away on the hammer and whatever he's doing in order to produce his kalim, is that not a problem? So the Yad Ramah says that's different. That's besoch beso. He's working inside of his house, but if he's running a store, it's not besoch beso. There's noise coming in and out of the chatzar all the time, meaning he may be running the store in his house, but the people that are coming through are coming through the actual chatzar. So it's one thing to make noise in your home. It's another thing to bring bring noise into the chatzar itself. That's the difference, ultimately, says the Ad Ramah. The Pesach Tshuva in the bottom of Chashem Mishpat and Simkuf Nunvav quotes Amar al-Bach, who explains the difference between the Reisha and the Sefer a little differently. He says, in the Reisha, the case is the guy wants to open up a store. A chatzar is not a place to open up a store. There's a shuk to sell things. You want to go sell things in the shuk. But in the Sefer, we're talking about a guy who's producing things. When he wants to produce kelim, he's going to sell them in the shuk. But where is he supposed to produce them? There's no other designated location where one can produce kelim. So it's natural and it's assumed that he's going to produce them in the place where he lives, in the chatzer. And that ultimately is the difference. Not the difference in terms of how much noise there is, says the Maral Bach, but in terms of whether he has a good excuse to be making that noise in this location. Says the Gemara, Maishna Reisha Umaishna Seifa. Again, with the assumption that the tinokos that you're not allowed to stop are tinokos that are just coming into shop in the store, why is it that in the Reisha we say you're allowed to stop people from opening a store because the shoppers are making too much noise? And in the second, and the end of the Mishnah, we say you're not allowed to stop the tinokos. Amar Abayi Seifa Asal Nechatzer Acheres. In the Seifa, Abayi says it must be talking about they're coming into a different chatzer, that it's people of a different chatzer that want to stop you from this chatzer, and that's where they can't do it. But if it's within the same chatzer that they live, they absolutely can stop you. Amar Le Rava, Yihachin Lisni Chatzer Acheres Mutter. Well, then it's really Iker Chasam and Seifa. The Mishnah didn't mention anything about Chatzer Acheres. It really should have said something if that were the case. Ella Amarava Seifa Asan Litinoka Shalbes Rabba. No, the case of the Seifa is not talking about kids that are coming to shop. It's talking about Tinoko Shalbes Rabba. It's talking about children who are coming to learn Torah. And this is assuming it's after the time where Yeshua ben Gamla made his takana. There's one person that we always remember for the great contribution he made to Klal Yisrael, and his name is Yeshua ben Gamla. If not for him, Torah would have been forgotten from the Jewish people. Because initially, someone who had a father, the father would teach him Torah, and if a child didn't have a father, he wouldn't learn any Torah. My darush, what was the drasha that they had to set up such a system where it was only the fathers teaching the sons Torah? Well, that they got based on the pasuk v'limadtem osam v'limadtem matem. If we darshin it's v'limadtem matem es b'nechem, you yourselves are supposed to teach your child Torah. But the problem was, and that was great for the kids who had fathers, and the father is uniquely capable of transmitting a Mesorah to his child. But the problem is, those who didn't have fathers, what were they going to do? So, Skinu Shiu Mashiv Malamdei Tinokos B'Yerushalayim. First takana they made, set up Malamdei Tinokos in Yerushalayim, that they will have yeshiva katanas in Yerushalayim to teach the kids Torah. My drosh, what was the drasha? Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah. Because the pasuk says, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, so they figured that's a great place to set up the yeshiva. V'adayin, Mishiyesh Lo'av Hayamalu Malamdo, Mishayin Lo'av Lo'ya Olo'av Lamad. It was the first carpool headache. The people who had fathers that could drive them to Yerushalayim. So great, they got to Yerushalayim and they were able to learn Torah. But the kids that didn't have fathers still didn't end up making it to be able to learn Torah. So they decided, you know what, we'll set up in every city so that a child will be able to walk to yeshiva. He's not going to need to have a father take him to yeshiva. And the ideal time where he's going to be sent off to yeshiva is when he's 16 or 17 years old. Then they realize that teenagers tend to be rebellious. If a Rebbe got angry at a kid, the kid just kicked the Rebbe and said, what do I need this for? And walked out, and he didn't learn any Torah. So Ad Shabbat Yoshua ben Gamla. Then Yoshua ben Gamla came up with a system that actually worked, and that's why we remember him for the good. V'tikein, he set up a takana, she'moshivin melamdi tinokos b'chol medina u'medina, u'v'chol ir v'ir. That you set up a yeshiva everywhere, every medina, every city. It's part of the fabric of a Jewish community. Before you have, you know, along with a mikvah, along with the Beis HaKnesses, you have a Melamdei Tinokos even before a pizza shop. You set up b'chal ir v'ir, b'chal medina u'medina. Machnis nosan, they would bring the kids in, kiven sheish, kiven sheva. When they're 6 or 7 years old, and they're still somewhat obedient. That's when you start teaching them. So Amle Rav Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Ad Shislo to Kabel Mikan Ve'elach Kabel Vasvile Ketura. That before the age of 6, he's not ready. He's not ready to be able to really learn Torah. Once he turns 6, then you can push it on him. You can push Torah on him. Stuff him like an ox. Vamle Rav Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Ki Machus Liyanuka Lo Timchi Elo Ba'arksa Demasna. And if a person has to, if a mechanech has to hit a child, he should only do so with a shoelace, meaning so with something that's not going to actually cause any sort of lasting damage. Kari, the kid who's going to learn is going to learn, and Kari lavitzavsi lechavri. And if a kid is not going to learn, keep him in a nice chevra of other boys who are learning, and then ultimately you'll see that it will work out for him as well. As Rashi says, lavitzavsi lechavri ein chazokuk liyasu yosemidai. Don't keep punishing the kid who's not learning. V'lo l'salkel mufanecha. Don't throw him out. You put him in a chevra of other kids who are learning. Ultimately, he'll want to do like the other children, and ultimately, he will learn as well. If the child is not learning, it's not a reason to overreact to his failure to learn. A few things that Tosus points out over here. First of all, the Tav Tosus Zachar also Ishtotov Yeshua ben Gamla Shmo. Yeshua ben Gamla comes up elsewhere in Shas in a much less flattering context, and Tosus is confused by that, because over here it sounds like he's a great Jewish hero. He kept Torah in Klal Yisrael. The other place it comes up was apparently he paid a lot of money to be able to serve as the Kohen Gadol, and people thought that that was a big avla, that someone is able to pay a lot of money to serve as the Kohen Gadol, and he's not fitting to serve as the Kohen Gadol. So says Tosos that it's true, it's the same person, but over, and he was a tzaddik gomor, but hayu acherim chashuvim imenu. There were other people that were more deserving of being the Kohen Gadol, and even that's a travesty. If a person who's less deserving than somebody else is able to pay his way into the position, that's a terrible thing. Nothing against Yeshua ben Gamla, he's really wonderful, but not everybody who's really wonderful should be the Kohen Gadol. Being the Kohen Gadol is a very serious thing, and that has to be reserved for whoever is the chashuv, whoever is the most chashuv person. Next, in the 2000 later, in Kim Tzion Teitzei Torah, Tosus points out that it's such an odd hava amina. They realize that someone who doesn't have a father is not learning Torah. So they set up a system where there's no real system. There's one yeshiva and it's only in Yerushalayim. What were they thinking? Why would they set up a yeshiva only in Yerushalayim? So Tosus doesn't ask it as a question, but he just points out what it was about Yerushalayim that they thought it would be a place that's uniquely primed for chinuch habanim. Lefisha yoroa kedusha gedola v'kohanim oskim ba'avoda hayim uchuvel nibol yoser liyerushamayim v'lil motora. Because there's a great sense of kedusha in Yerushalayim, in Yerushalayim, you get to see the kohanim ba'avodasim. The whole atmosphere is an atmosphere of avodas Hashem. And ultimately, if you want to be successful in being mechanich children, it's not all. People put a lot of emphasis on exactly what system you're using to teach the children, and using the most modern methods to teach the children. Ultimately, what's going to matter most when you're teaching a child Torah is the atmosphere of Yerushalayim. If there's an overall atmosphere of Yerushalayim where a kid who's a better Oved Hashem is going to be respected for being a better Oved Hashem, as opposed to, let's say, made fun of for being a better Oved Hashem, well, then that's the atmosphere where a child is going to be able to thrive in Torah. But if it's an atmosphere that doesn't lend itself to Yerushalayim, all the systems in the world aren't going to help the child. It has to be an overall avira of Yerushalayim. That's what they were assuming when they set up the yeshivos in Yerushalayim. That's why people are bringing. They have a system. We have a system minat Torah where we bring Meister Sheni to Yerushalayim so that everyone gets that little jolt of Yerushalayim in their schedule, because you got to bring all your Meister Sheni to Yerushalayim, and it's good to see all the people oskim b'melacha shamayim u'ba'avoda. Tosos says, and that will that was the havamina why it would be uniquely capable of setting up a successful yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Then Tosus in 2000 later than that, Bibatsir Mibar Shis Lo Tekabel, the Gemara had said that if someone's less than 6 years old, he's not really ready to learn. Fractosos, there's a Beferish of Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that discusses at what age children are ready and adults are ready to learn and to accomplish different things. And the Mishnah says very clearly, Ben Chamesh Lemikra. When a child is 5 years old, he's ready for Tanakh, he's ready for Mikra. So asks Tosfos, our Gemara says, less than 6 years old, he's ready for nothing. So Tosfos says that it depends on the child. It depends how strong the child is, depends how precocious the child is, and he says that's why The Gemara says in Maseches Ksuvos that someone who teaches his child when he's under 6 years old, Rotz Achara Ve'eno Magio, V'ikada Amri Chaveir of Rotz Achara Ve'en Magiyo. So that either one of two things is going to happen. Either the parent is going to be chasing the child, you got to learn, and he's never going to catch up to him, the kid is not interested, he's not going to be able to accomplish anything, or the kid is going to be so advanced because he's learning at such a young age that chaverim ratzim akraveda magim, that his friends are never going to catch up to him. He's going to be so strong in learning. So which is it when you teach a five-year-old? Is he going to be so advanced, or are you wasting your time and perhaps damaging him? Well, the answer is, depends on the child. If it's a child that is able to handle it, so then yeah, it could be that he'll be very advanced. If the child is not able to handle it, and that's everything. That's chanoch l'nar al pi darko. A person has to understand. Sometimes a person sees, oh, that guy, he learns with his children, and his kids finish Shas by the time they're bar mitzvah, Shas Bavli by bar mitzvah. You know, not every kid is going to finish Shas Bavli by the bar mitzvah. Very often, if a kid finishes Shas Bavli by the bar mitzvah, it'll be the last time he finishes Shas Bavli. It's not going to happen again. So a person has to know what the child is ready for, what each individual child is able to handle. Let's not lose sight of what the sugya is about. The sugya is about setting up a melame tinokos in a chatzer. Now, we were saying that the reason you cannot stop tinokos is because we're talking about tinokos shel beis rabban, and based on the takar of Rabbi Shubin Gamlu, we see the importance of tinokos shel beis rabban. So that's why you're allowed to set it up in a chatzer, even if it's going to cause noise and it may be mafriya the neighbors. The Yad Rama writes that when Rava says that you can't stop a melame tinokos in a chatzer because it makes noise, it's mistaver that the same is true for every dvar mitzvah. Tefillah b'tzibur, limud b'beis hamedrash. You want to set that up in the chatzar, so there's a kol Torah that emanates from the beis hamedrash. When there's davening, there's a kol tefillah that emanates from the davening. So can the neighbors stop you from that? No, they can't stop you from that either. And that's what the Torah writes in Chosh Mishpatim Kuf Nun Vav. Any dvar mitzvah, even if it's noisy, that's part of Jewish life. That's the hum of Jewish life, and that is something that the Bnei Chatzer have to be willing to put up with. However, the Beis Yosef is medayik from Rashi and from the Ramban against that it's dafka melami tinokos that you're not allowed to be ma'akev, because the Gemara makes a big deal about takanas Yoshua ben Gamla, that there was a special takana specifically about melami tinokos. So yes, where there's a special takana specifically to address melami tinokos, that's what we're going to say, you can't stop it. But there was never a special takana specifically for Bate Knesios, for Bate Midrashos, for any other Dvar Mitzvah. So if there was never any special Takana, then you can be Ma'akev. Just on a detail point over here, the Gemara says, why is Yoshua ben Gamla so worthy of praise? Because Ilmalehu Nishtakach Torah Mi'Yisrael. Had it not been for him, Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. The Marsha raises the question that the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuflam and Chesam Beis, Rabbi Shum ben Yochai says, Chas v'sholom sh'nishtakach Torah Mi'Yisrael, sh'nemar ki lo tishkach mi'pizaro. That the Pasuk says in Devarim Perek Lamed Aleph, Torah will never be forgotten from the Jewish people. It's impossible. It can't happen. So how can the Gemara say, Ilmalehu nishtakach Torah mi'Yisrael? The Achronim give different answers. I saw one of the Achronim, the answer I like the most, I think one of the answers that Iyun Yaakov gives, is that no, of course the Torah would not have been ultimately forgotten from Klal Yisrael. It's a question of how it was going to be saved, though. Meaning every generation has a challenge where you wonder, how on earth is Torah going to survive this? Television was invented. How is Torah going to survive? Take a kid, show him a sefer and show him that. How on earth is Torah going to survive this kind of challenge? There's a formidable challenge in every generation, and somehow Kadosh Baruch Hu sees to it that Torah survives. But Megalgalin Zechus Al Yidei Zakai, Yoshua ben Gamla happened to be the one that was the vehicle through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Torah in that generation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have come up with something else if it was Yoshua ben Gamla, but it's saying that he was the one that actually saved Torah in that generation. The Gemara also had mentioned the Matam Osam, we dash from the Matam Atem, that you should teach your own children Torah. So that it's a mitzvah on the father to teach his kids Torah. There is the major sugya about what exactly a father has to teach his child is the sugya Maseches Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. Ad Heichan Chayav Adam Lamed Espino Torah, Amar Avidur Shmuel Kigon Zvulun Ben Dun. Like Zvulun Ben Ben Dan, whose grandfather taught him Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Alachos, Agados, taught him everything. So the Gemara says, wait, I thought you only have to teach Mikra, and you don't even have to teach Mishnah. So the Gemara answers, you have to teach like Zvulun Ben Dan, in the sense that even a grandfather has to teach a grandson. But Eino Chinami, you don't have to teach any more than Mikra. However, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah Perek Aleph that if the minhag is to hire Melamed Tinokos Bischar, you have to hire Melamed Tinokos, pay money for one, and you have to teach him Bischar Ad Sheyikra Torah Shebichsav Kula. Not Mikra, meaning not just Chumash, but all of Tanakh. The Torah quotes from the Ramah that if you're able to, you should hire a Melamed Tinokos to teach him Halachos V'Agados as well. Meaning whatever we're capable of teaching him, and it doesn't stop at Bar Mitzvah. This is a separate Chiyuv, aside from Chinuch, of teaching Torah. So teaching Torah continues. Whatever you're able to teach him is obviously better. The more you're able to teach the child, the more the better it's going to be. For the child's ability to learn throughout his whole life. Okay, let's see the Gemara further now. Says the Gemara. The Gemara is going to have three challenges to this idea that you're not allowed to stop a Malami Tinokos from opening up in the Chatzar. Challenge number one, Meisvei. Echon Mei Chatzar Shabikesh Lasos, Rofe Yuman, Vegardi, Umelame Tinokos. If someone in the Chatzar wants to open up a Rofe Uman, either that's two different things or one thing, but let's assume it's one thing. A Rofe Uman, Rashi says there's two things. A Rofe is a Moel, Uman is a Makizdam, is someone who bloodlets. Others say no, it means an expert doctor, or a Gardi or a weaver, or a Milame Tinokos. B'nei Chatzar Ma'akvinalev. The B'nei Chatzar can stop him. So how can we say that you can't stop a Milame Tinokos? No, that's talking about Tinokos Ta'akum. It's talking about non-Jewish children, which is not considered a Dvar Mitzvah to teach them. The Rishonim point out that it means that you're teaching them an Umnus, because you're not allowed to teach Tinokos Akum Torah. Obviously, the Gemara says that Marasha Kilis Yaakov, Marasha El Marasa, that it's Asur to teach Torah to non-Jews, so it means that you're being Malamed Umnus. So ask the Avni Nezer, but wait a second, that's why it has to say that it's non-Jewish children, says the Avni Nezer, because if it were Jewish children, then it would be a Dvar Mitzvah, meaning teaching Jewish children an Umnus, teaching them a profession, is a Dvar Mitzvah. So that's why we have to say Dafka, that it's Akum. That's why the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Chav Tes says that you're allowed to decide on Shabbos who's going to teach your child an Umnus, because that's considered Cheftzei Shamayim. That's considered a religious obligation to determine who's going to teach your child an Umnus. Tashem Aligmar says another challenge. Shnayim Shiyoshim Bechatzar Bikishachem Neon Lasos Rofei V'Uman V'Gardi Umelame Tinokos Chaveru Ma'akevalav. If you have two people that live in the Chatzar, one of them wants to set up a Rofei. Over here it's V'Uman. It doesn't say Rofei, it's Rofei V'Uman, so it sounds more like Rashi. Two different professions. A weaver or a Melame Tinokos. His friend can be Ma'akev and can say, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to set it up. Hachinami b'tinokos ta'akum. So says Gemara, no, this might also be talking about a tinokos ta'akum, and therefore it's not a problem. Tashma, third challenge. Mishtir shal bayis b'chatzar ha'shutfin. If someone has a house in a chatzar that's owned by partners, hareze lo yaskirenu, he may not rent out that house. Lo l'rofe, v'lo l'uman, v'lo l'gardi, v'lo l'sofer yehudi, v'lo l'sofer armai. What's a sofer yehudi? The assumption is a sofer yehudi is a melame tinokos. And apparently you're not allowed to rent out that house because the neighbors are going to be upset by the noise. Answers the Gemara, Hachmei Eskinan, Bisofer Masa. When we say Sofer Yehudi, what we mean is the Sofer Masa. Rashi understands that means someone who's Melamed as a Melamdim, someone, it's a teacher college, it teaches the teachers how to teach. Tosfos quotes that that it means someone who's Melamed Kola Tinokos Shaliir, that there's a very, very loud noise from that. That's what you're allowed to stop, meaning it's not just Stam, a classroom, it's a principal with a whole school where all the kids in the whole city go there. That's the problem. That's maybe the sofer masa. So those are the possibilities of what exactly it's talking about. And then Tosos and the Ramban say maybe it's not even talking about a teacher at all. Maybe it's talking about someone who's a scribe, someone who writes shtaros, and that's what the shechinim could stop. The neighbors could say, we're not interested just for people to write shtaros for all the traffic that it's going to bring into the chatzer. Amar Rav. Now Rav is going to make five different statements about chinuch of children. First statement: Mitakarnes Yeshubin Gamel Ve'elach Lo Mamtinun Yenuka Mimasa LaMasa Avul MiBeKnisha LeBeNekishna Mamtinun. From the time Yeshubin Gamel made his takana to set up little yeshivos in every town, a parent no longer has the responsibility to schlep a child from one city to another in order for him to be able to learn Torah. If that's what it would take, if the closest yeshiva is in the next city, the Jewish community in this city has to set up a Malamei Tinokos. The assumption the Gemara has throughout, and this is clear in Halacha, is that the requirement to pay for the Malamei Tinokos is not the parents' requirement, it's the city's requirement, the entire Jewish population's requirement. Just like a shul, a mikveh, and everything else, it's part of Jewish infrastructure. So it's not where the burden falls on the parents. It's much more like the model that we have for public education, where everybody pays a school tax, and it doesn't fall squarely on the shoulders of the parents. So that's the assumption, that so the parent can say, I know I'm the only one with a kid here, but it's all of our responsibilities that my kid gets a proper chinuch, so they all have to hire a rebbe for that person's kid. But the mafsik nahara lo mamtinan. But to go from one shul to another, you can the parent is expected to go to take me beknishta le beknishta. I have to schlep all the way across the street to the other shul and then down the block to the third shul. All of that. So yeah, that far he has to go to be able to bring in the kid. The mafsik nahara lo mamtinan. But if there's a river that separates his where he lives from the yeshiva, that far he doesn't have to go, because that's dangerous. But if there's a very wide, comfortable bridge to walk over, then he does have to do that. But if there's a narrow, scary bridge, that he doesn't have to take the child over. They should set up a yeshiva locally rather than have to take the child over a bridge that's going to be a pachad to be able to pass over. Second statement of Rava. The ideal class size is 25 children in a class. The Marsha writes that the siman is ko sivarchu es b'nei Yisrael, ko chafhei. With 25, that's going to be the greatest source of bracha. V'yika chamishin musvinin trei. If there are 50, then you set up two melamde tinokos. You know, people often think that the smaller the class size, automatically it's better. Like if you have a class of four people, that's great. That's even better than a class. I think the research shows that that's not true. Certainly, when it gets too large, like the Gemara is saying, also not effective. But there is like an ideal class size, because there's a sharing of ideas that should be happening, as the Gemara said, there's a certain dynamic that's created in a classroom when there are multiple people in the room that's lost when you don't have a class. So what you gain in the personal attention, you sometimes lose in the social interaction and the sharing of ideas and understanding what's a good question, what's a bad question, just through the dynamic of a classroom. So it's not always just that it should be as small as possible. So 25, the Gemara says, is a reasonable number. If there are 50 students, then you better have two teachers. And if there are 40 students, you have to hire an assistant teacher for 40 students. You can't have just one teacher in charge of 40 students. And the third statement of Rava, if there's one teacher who's currently working, who learns, and he's good, he learns with the children, but there's another one who seems like he would do much better, don't fire the first one, because the one who takes over is going to say, oh, I'm God's gift to humanity. They fired a teacher who had done nothing wrong just for me. And then he's going to slack on the job, because he's going to think that he's going to be overconfident in his abilities. No, that's not going to be his attitude. He's going to say, if the last guy got fired for not doing anything wrong just because they found someone better, then I better be the best, because if I don't want to... So Adrab, it's going to motivate him to be an even better teacher. Fourth statement of Rava, V'amar Rava, Hani Trei Mikri Dardiki, two teachers of young children. One of them covers a lot of ground, but is not super precise to make sure that the kids understand every word. And the other one is super precise to make sure the kids understand every word. And because of that, probably doesn't cover all that much ground, because he doesn't move on until every kid understands every word. So which one should you hire? Better to have the one who covers a lot of ground, even if it's not always perfectly precise. Why? There may be some mistakes that the kids will learn. Shabeshta memela nafka. The kids, as they get older, they'll realize, ah, okay, so I got that wrong, or the teacher got that wrong. I misunderstood that. It will fix itself. The mistakes will fix themselves, but the amount of ground covered is going to be worth it. Rav Dimon Arda Amar Musfina de Dayik Valagaris. So Rav Dimon Arda, this is an age-old machlokas, goes back to the times of the Amoraim. He says, no, you need precision in the classroom. You have to make sure they're not being taught anything that's incorrect, because that's not the way mistakes happen. Shabeshta, kivan da al. Oh, the way mistakes work is that once it's taught to a child at a young age, he will think that forever. Whatever the kindergarten teacher told him, the first grade rabbi told him, he's going to think that forever. And if it's mistaken, that's going to be with him for the rest of his life. So there's a discussion of how we view mistakes that are taught to a young child. The Gemara Maseches Pesachim and Daf Kuf Yud Beis says, Amar Rava Shabeshta, Rava says, Shabeshta Kivan to Ol. In the Gemara Pesachim, he contradicts himself. He says that a mistake, once it's there, it's going to be there forever. Over here, Rav Dimi's arguing on Rava. Rava is the one that says that, nah, don't worry about it. The mistake will go away. So Tosaf there asks the Stira in Rava. And Tosaf says, no, our sugi is talking about someone who's learning from a Rebbe who's not Medayik. So that's what Rava holds. The kid will get older and he'll realize that it was a mistake and he'll mature. The Gemara over there is talking about someone who's learning from a Sefer She'in Amuga. He's learning from a mistaken book, meaning he's opening up a Sefer and he's relying on what's on the written word. So that's not that he's going to be sumich, whatever the Sefer says, it's in print. You know, people have the attitude, if it's in print, it must be correct, because there must be some strong vetting or editing process before anything actually hits the printing press. So he's going to rely on what it says in the Sefer. So that Rav is much more concerned that mistakes are going to be much more lasting. D'chsiv, and how do I know that mistakes last and that they stick? Because the pasuk says, "Kisheshes chadashim yashav shom Moav v'kol Yisrael ad hichris kol zachar be'edom." That in the war against Edom, Yoav led the troops to wipe out every male of Edom. So Kiyasal came to David when he came to report back to David. Amar lei, my time of Adtachi. David says, "I just don't understand one thing. We're at war with Edom. You're supposed to wipe out every last member of Edom. Why did you only wipe out the males? Why didn't you kill the Nekevos as well?" Amalei Dechsiv, he says it's a Beferish Pasuk. Timcha es Zachar Amalek. You're supposed to wipe out the males of Amalek. Amalei, David says, whoa, you really don't know how to read the Pasuk. Va'anan Zecher Karinan. The way to read that Pasuk is Zecher, not Zachar, but any remnant of Amalek. Not every male of Amalek. There's a discussion whether it's Zecher or Zecher. Right? If you look in the Bach over here, it says Zecher Karinan. They quote from the Maaser Rav that in Maaser Rav, they say that the Vilna Gaon used to read it Zecher Amalek with a segel, not Zecher Amalek. Either way, it means a remnant of Amalek, any remembrance of Amalek. It does not mean the males of Amalek. That line in Maaser Rav, when they brought the Maaser Rav to Rav Chaim Velazhner to review and to see what he thought about all the hanhagos they wrote up of the Gra, he says it's really great. Almost every hanhaga I could vouch for, it's true that the Vilna Gaon did these things. There are only two that I have a problem with. One of the ones that he had a problem with, he said, I heard the Gra read Parsha Zachar. The Gra used to read Parsha Zachar himself. He didn't allow Balkare to do it. Because the Kriya Daraisa, he wanted to do it himself. The Gra was makbid every week that he would get shishi, and that he would take the Aliyah for all Dalit Parshios, but Parsha Zachar, he would dafka read it himself. So some of the Acharim suggest that the Gra took Shishi, even though really the Pashas of the Sugi and Gittin is that Shlishi is the ideal Aliyah. So some say the Gra did that Mirovan Vasnuso, because he was such an Anav that he thought that he's not at the level to get Shlishi, that the Gemara goes through a whole procession of, you know, people who are Parnes Alatzibur, or who are, great Talmid Chachamim, he thought that he was only at the level of getting shishi, but the Pashtus in the Maaser Rav is not that way, because he was makbid to get all the Dalit Parshios. He read Parsha Zachar himself. He wanted the best aliyah, so he thought shishi was the best aliyah. Pi Kabbalah, shishi is the best aliyah. But it says there in Maaser Rav, he would read it himself, and Rav Chaim Velazhner, in his Haskama to Maaser Rav, says that he never read it Zachar. I don't know what you're talking about. He read it Zachar. Other Talmidei HaGra respond to that, and they say, you must have not heard him at the end of his life. He probably changed his mind and you didn't hear, but he did. He actually read it, Zecher. So there's some confusion about that, whether it's Zecher or Zecher. But anyway, but it's definitely not Zachar, so Yoav made this mistake. Amalei ana Zachar Karyon. So Yoav said, I was taught Zachar. Also Shaila the Rabbi. So he said, you know what? I better go find my first grade Rabbi and ask him the way how did he teach me the Chumash? Amalei Hecha Krisan. So he asked the Rabbi, how did you teach it to me? Amalei. And there are no Nukudas in the Gemara. So we don't know what he said. He said, Zayin Chaf Resh. So the Tosus on the bottom of Amud Aleph has two deos. Tosus says, Pirush Rach, De Rabbi Akriye Zecher Kedid, that he taught it to him properly. And the problem with the Rebbe was that even though he knew it, he didn't make sure that his Talmidim knew it. Aval ein nir lefarish Tosfos says shagam rabo to avlim do zachar dim kein la ram yehu. He says it's not logical to assume that the Rebbe himself didn't know, because then you can't really blame the Rebbe for not teaching properly. He was a great teacher of whatever knowledge he had. It was just he himself was mistaken. So Pashtus Tosfos says is the Rebbe knew it. The Rebbe said zecher. So shakla safsir lemitle. So Yoav took out a spear ready to kill the Rebbe. Amalei amai. The Rebbe said, wait, why are you doing that? Amalei dichsiv. That cursed is one who doesn't take Melech Hashem seriously and who messes up. Good, so let me be cursed, but I don't want to be dead, so put the spear away. But it also says cursed is one who's Moneh Charbo Midam, who holds back his sword from blood. So that's why I have to do something about this. There are alternate endings to the story. Some say that he killed him, some say that he didn't kill him. The Ritva writes that Yesh Mefarshim, that when he said Or Moneh Charbo Midam, is that if he doesn't kill his Rebbe, then he's going to be Ba'arur. But the Ritva says that's a difficult pshat to accept, because then how can the Gemara say Ikadamri Lo Katle? Meaning then he has a responsibility to kill him. So he says, no, Or Moneh Charbo Midam, if you look in the Chumash, that's actually about killing those nations that we have to kill upon entering Eretz Yisrael. So he was saying, I'm Ba'arur because of you. Not that I'm Ba'arur for not killing you. I'm Ba'arur because I didn't do my job properly. I only killed out the Zachar Amalek, not all Zechar of Amalek. And Moneh Achar B'chal Midam, if you don't kill those nations that you're supposed to kill, you're Ba'arur. So I'm, you think I take this lightly? But then you understand the alternate endings. It could be that he didn't kill him, because just because you're Ba'arur doesn't mean that you have to kill the person that led you to that place to be Ba'arur. Okay, V'amar Rava, last statement of Rava about Chinuch, Mikri Yanuka Shasla Tavcha V'umna V'sofer Masa Kulan Kamusun V'umdininhu. All of these different professions. Someone who teaches young children, someone who's Shasla, Rashi says, someone who plants a vineyard for half of the produce of the vineyard, Tavcha, a butcher, or an Umna, a bloodletter, and a Sofer Masa. All of them are considered to be pre-warned. What is a Sofer Masa? So Rashi says, a guy who writes Sifrei Torah, and he messes up, he's considered pre-warned. It's something he could be fired on the first offense, because it's something that's a Pseida de lo Hadar. It's something if you mess up, there's no fixing it. Says Tosfos, why not? You could just fix it. Just fix the Torah. So he says, no, it means a Sofer Shtaro, someone who writes Shtaro. So you're right that this one owes that one money, and it was a mistake, and now he has a Shtar that says that he's able to collect money. So all these people are considered pre-warned. Klala de Milsa. Any loss that cannot be retrieved, any irretrievable loss, is considered to be pre-warned, is considered to be Musrava Omid. Says Tosos, and why is it that it's a Pseidat Lohadar when someone teaches a child Torah and he messes up? So says Tosos, because we're assuming, like the opinion, that Shabeshlik even Dol Ol, that when you teach a child a mistake, it will stick with him for the rest of his life. Says Tosos, the problem is, this is the same Rava that just taught us in Amud Aleph that Shabeshta Memela Nafka, that no, the mistakes will go away, the kid will mature, he'll get over it, he'll learn the right way eventually. So Tos says, no, the Pseida Dlo Hadar is the time. That time that the Rebbe was trusted with the children to be able to teach the children Torah, if he wasn't teaching the children Torah during that time, they're never going to get that time back. And for the rest of his life, you know, there's only so much time that he's going to be able to sit in a classroom and be able to learn from a Rebbe. And that he's not going to get back. That's a Pseida Delo Hadar. I think I once asked Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky at a Torah Masorah convention if you could tell the Rebbeim who show up late to Yeshiva, that come late to class, that they're violating Geneva. He said, because they're taking a paycheck and they're not showing up on time. He said, Geneva, tell them they're violating Ritzicha. It's Mamisha Pseida Delo Hada. That's a loss that can never that can never be retrieved. Amar Rav Huna. So now we move on to the next sugya, which is setting up a competing business in a chatzer. So you have a person in a mavo, he sets up a mill. And someone else wants to set up a competing mill, you could stop him. You're stopping my livelihood. Someone wants to put out a fish net to catch fish, you have to keep it far away from your neighbor's fish net. A parsa away. So don't you see it's the same thing? No, shiny dagum diavis siara. Fish are different because they already start moving toward the bait. So that's why we have to be more makbid about fish. Maybe Rav Huna's in line with Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda omer lo yichali chenveni kleyus vegozlan litinokos nesham ragilin etzlo v'cham matirin. Rav Yehuda holds a storekeeper shouldn't give out candies because then the kids are always going to want to shop at his store. So you're stealing other people's clients. You're stealing other people's customers. The chamim have no problem with it. But don't you see Rav Huna holds that same way? Says we're not. Filutem rabbanon. Even the Rabbanu who have no problem with giving out candies will have a problem with opening up a competing mill. I give out one type of candy, you give out another type of candy. That's all fair game. But over here, even the Rabbanu will be moda that you open up a mill and someone in the same chatzer, that you're really stopping the person's livelihood. That you're not allowed to do. That you could open up a store next to your friend's store, a bathhouse next to your friend's bathhouse. You can't do anything about it. You do what you want in your property, I do what I want on my property. So don't you see that you're allowed to do these things? And so Gemara Tanoihi, it's actually Machlokas Tanoim, Titania. The people that live in the Mavoi are able to force each other not to set up a tailor, a tanner, a melame tinokos, nor any of the other bali umnius, nor any other of the professions. Ulishcheno einu kofehu. But there's a machlokes whether someone who lives in that mavoi can be stopped from opening up something in that mavoi. So that machlokes tanaim is our machlokes. He's opening up a competing business, but maybe he has every right to a business that I have because we both live here in the same mavoi. Amar Rav Huna berei de Rav Yehoshua pshitali bar someone comes from out of town and wants to open up a business, for sure you could stop him. But if he lives out of town and he pays local taxes, you can't stop him. Then he's a local. Someone who wants to stop another member of his very same mavoi cannot stop him. What if you live in the same city but a different mavoi? Can you stop the guy? Take who the Gemara leaves that unresolved. Rav Huna's moda that you cannot stop a competing yeshiva. Because the more competition there is in the world of teaching Torah, the more chachma ultimately there's going to be that gets taught. Okay, but we'll pick up from the top line tomorrow.